it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Two balls, two strikes, two down with the bases loaded. Chapman, he is ready. He throws. Fastball swung on and missed. He got him. Chapman leaves the bases loaded, and the Red Sox win game one, 3-1 in the Bronx. An absolute gem from Crochet. Yoshida, a huge hit, and a dramatic yet thrilling save for Chapman.
This is Red Sox Review, and it starts right now. Here's your host, Joe Weil.
Red Sox Review rolls on all the way up to midnight because we can still revel in what a victory game one was for the Red Sox. Aroldis Chapman, as you just heard the final call there from Will Fleming, wrapping it up after loading the bases in the bottom of the ninth inning, but he gets out of it with three consecutive outs. And after it was all said and done, after it was a heart-stopping game in a lot of ways, frustration early on, but ultimately jubilation in the end, the Red Sox a winner 3-1 against the New York Yankees. Garrett Crochet etches himself into Red Sox lore with one of the best pitching performances that you'll see, especially in today's modern age where guys don't go deep into games as they used to back in the day. 7 2/3 innings, 4 hits, 1 run, 11 strikeouts for the War Pig, and he threw it at 100 miles an hour on his last pitch of the game, pitch number 117 to Austin Wells to close out his outing before Aroldis Chapman ultimately wrapped it up. So we have a lot to talk about, and we want to hear from you as always. 617-779-7937. Got my man Zach Coe still hanging out with me here for this final hour on Tuesday, September 30th. Well, we will remember, I think, for a long time, and especially if the Red Sox go on to win this series. We got game two coming up tomorrow with Brian Bayo on the mound. But let's soak in this win while we can before we have to fully shift gears to game two. And what I wanted to start off with, and again, we want to hear from you, 617-779-7937. We got calls lined up, texts, we'll get to those as well. But as I've fully digested today's game, I just thought about how fortunate this franchise is to have a guy like Garrett Crochet, and especially because these guys don't grow on trees. There are so many good pitchers in the sport, but this guy's on a whole different level. And I think tonight was the perfect example of that. The guy on the other side, Max Fried, he was really good. Really good. 6 1/3 shutout innings, 4 hits, no runs. He walked 3, struck out 6. Really good. You could see why the Sox wanted to sign him first in the offseason before they had to pivot to Garrett Crochet after the Yankees signed him. But Aaron Boone took him out. I think you can second guess that, but I also think there is some logic to it where he wasn't as sharp as he had been earlier on in the game, and he was at 102 pitches. And the reality is, guys are not built like Garrett Crochet all that often. You could probably name two other people that I think are on that same level right now. It's Skeen Scoobal and him. And he's your ace. He's the guy that can pitch into the eighth inning. He's the guy that can give up a home run, say, okay, let's forget about it. Screw that. Screw you, Anthony Volpe. I'm going to retire 17 consecutive batters. He's the guy that's going to pitch into the eighth inning, and on pitch number 117, a career high in a playoff game in the most hostile of environments, you're facing your arch rival on the road, he dials it up to 100 miles an hour, and Austin Wells looked like he saw a ghost. This is unreal, historic stuff that Garrett Crochet did tonight. I think you know that. But I also think it's important to emphasize, just like you see in other sports, there are stars, but then there are superstars. Max Fried, that's a star. Garrett Crochet, though, he is a superstar. He's on the Mount Rushmore of best pitchers right now in Major League Baseball. That is undeniable, and tonight was another example of that. They needed him in every which way possible because their offense wasn't getting it done. Obviously, we know they're shorthanded without Roman Anthony right now on the offensive side of things. And you can argue that in some ways, left-handed pitchers are not the best matchup for this team. Just because you don't have guys like Yoshida and Willier Abreu in the lineup in terms of building out maybe your most ideal lineup. You needed this guy to step up, and he did. Not every pitcher can do this. The Yankees have a Cy Young who's hurt right now, but we saw what happened in 2021 in the wild card game. He doesn't rise to the occasion against our rivals. This guy does. And he got him locked up for the long term. And what I want to discuss tonight, while we have time here before we close things out right at midnight, what I want to discuss tonight, too, is how far do you feel like this team can go now? Now that you've actually seen Garrett Crochet in a playoff game and see what he's capable of, and we're going to get to the calls here in 1 second, the final thing I wanted to weave in, I thought what was incredible was the quote that Alex Cora gave about what Garrett Crochet told him yesterday. Hey, Zach, I know you guys played this before. What was your... let me just say what the quote was. Basically, Alex Cora said that he was in the dugout with me. He's like... he said to Alex Cora yesterday that he was only going to have to make one call to the bullpen. And he was saying it's going to just be straight to Aroldis Chapman. What was your reaction when you heard that, Zach?
I mean, everything about the last couple of days with Garrett Crochet has just cemented, like, this is why you go out and get a guy like this. Like, obviously, he had the regular season that he had. You mentioned it. He's in that Mount Rushmore. It's him, it's Paul Skeens, and it's Tarik Skubal as the top three pitchers in baseball. And we have Cora yesterday saying that he's telling everyone it's a business trip. We're here to do a job. We're here to get a job done. Like, he's just the ultimate professional. Like, it's so great that they traded for him. Like, thank God they whiffed on Max Fried in free agency and pivoted to him.
I know, and you look at the numbers. Like, now they've signed him long-term. They've signed Garrett Crochet long-term. And there was an argument out there, I think, in the time in which they traded for him, where people were like, wow, they gave up a similar prospect capital to Chris Sale, or when they got Chris Sale, and Chris Sale had the pedigree, right? Chris Sale had been an all-star many times over by the point the Red Sox traded for him. Now what I'm thinking about is, how about if you traded for Chris Sale just as he was becoming Chris Sale?
I mean, that's exactly what it's been. I mean, the Chris Sale rumors started, what, 2-3 years before they actually pulled the trigger on a deal? So this is exactly like doing that when the rumors first started, just going out and getting a horse. And, like, now if Crochet keeps going this way, like, he's going to be a Hall of Fame pitcher for you. Like, he's one of the best young pitchers in the game. That's not an exaggeration.
And by the way, Chris Sale in his first postseason with the Red Sox was not as good as this. Not as good as this. What Crochet did tonight is historic stuff. I was looking this up. He's the second pitcher in Red Sox postseason history in the live ball era, so that starts 1920, to go at least 7 2/3 innings and strike out 11 batters in an outing. The only other guy is Josh Beckett, who did that in Game 5 of the ALCS in 2007 when they had his ex-girlfriend sing the national anthem prior to the game. I still can't believe the Guardians, formerly the Indians, did that. And did anything to light a fire under his belly. All right, let's go to the phones here. Let's go to Dylan. Is in the car. He wants to talk about Max Fried. What's happening, Dylan? Thanks for being patient.
Hey, what's up? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right. About 30 minutes ago, your colleague mentioned that Max Fried was maybe pulled a little bit too early, and that this is another typical Boone blow up. I don't think so. Maybe Will and Will were being a little too positive. I think that 2-run breakthrough was inevitable as far as I was concerned.
Dylan, I agree with you and I appreciate the call. I was actually texting a buddy as the game was progressing, and I had told him how I picked the Red Sox in this series because I think they're a bad matchup for the New York Yankees. I was actually talking about this on post game on Sunday, where I just feel like this team from the Yankees' perspective, this is the team you wanted to face the least in this wild card series, best of three, because the Sox team has Crochet, so they have that pitcher that can neutralize Max Fried, but on top of that, their bullpen's so much better. And to Dylan's last point, you had to be kidding yourself if you didn't think that the bullpen was going to play a factor and in the Red Sox favor too, because the Yankees were 23rd in ERA, bullpen ERA, coming into the postseason, worst among the competitors in the postseason field. And the Red Sox were second. You had to be kidding yourself if you didn't think that was going to play some factor at some point. We've killed Aaron Boone so many times, and I've said this to you guys so many times, especially to the callers that I get, that every loss is Cora's fault. And if you feel like Cora maybe screwed this up, I do want to hear this. You know, I want to hear from you. 617-779-7937, because the roster or the lineup construction today was super fascinating. And ultimately, it worked out. Nick Sogard had a really big game for this team. He was one of the clutchest players today. I want to touch on that Seydon Rafael at bat in the seventh inning too. But they were going to have to go to that bullpen at some point. And I think that, yeah, you could have maybe kept in Free, but then if you give up a home run to Seydon Rafael, you're second guessing that too. I think what was so important was that 25 pitch fourth inning, and I heard Alex Cora credit Carlos Narvaez. Maybe he got a little bit of help with a pitch that looked like it nicked the top of the zone, but he did walk. He worked a long at bat to get a walk, and they didn't score. They ended up leaving runners on second and third because Jaron Duran struck out, but they still made him throw 25 pitches. And again, that the point I made at the top, I think, is the most critical point of what I'm going to say tonight. There are stars, and then there are superstars. Max Fried's a great pitcher, but he's not built like Garrett Crochet. And you heard the guys talk about it on the broadcast tonight. He never looks tired. He never looks tired. Like, maybe he could have just kept going. Obviously, they don't want to push him beyond where he was at that point. And you have Aroldis Chapman, who's been so good. But to throw it at 100, to throw a 100-mile-an-hour pitch at pitch 117, I mean, it's unheard of. It's unheard of. And that's why I got so frustrated. We have to hit a break here in one moment. And again, what we're going to have coming up, we want to get your thoughts on tonight's win. 617-779-7937. There's so many heroes from tonight. I want to hit on all of them. But we're also going to hear from Alex Bregman and Garrett Crochet as well. But that last pitch to Austin Wells, to strike him out, the look on his face said it all. And in the post-game comments, too, from the Yankees side of things, I was just listening into it. They're all calling him either the best or one of the best pitchers in baseball. And Aaron Judge said he's the best pitcher in baseball. I think Scooble's probably going to win the Cy Young. But this makes me excited about if we do get a Red Sox-Tigers matchup somehow in the postseason. It wouldn't be until the ALCS. But just to see those two teams match up and to see those guys duke it out to see who's really the top guy.
I would love to see the number on the total in Vegas in that game. Like
number of strikeouts too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, insane.
Would be ridiculous. All right, again, Red Sox Review, we're taking you up to midnight, 617-779-7937. Feel free to text us on the text line as well. I pose this to you guys. Now that the Sox won tonight, does it change your outlook on how far this team can go in the postseason? We also want to hear your experience watching this game tonight. At what points were you nervous? At what points did you think this was possibly in doubt? Because I have a couple. We'll hit on that. But again, we're going to hear from some more of the guys here on Red Sox Review. We're going to take a break, come back with more right after this.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back to Red Sox Review on WEEI.
Massa digs in. Weaver throws, Massa swings and rides one into center field. Base hit. Saved down, scores. Sogard behind him. Hello, Macho Man. Two-run hit, and the Red Sox lead it 2-1.
Alex Cora, we talk about it. He's such a good manager, pushing the right buttons in these big games. He sticks with Sogard. He comes through. He brings in Yoshida. He comes through. It's a new ball game.
This is Masataka Yoshida's wake-up song. When he wakes up in the morning, he's blasting this song. Huge knock for Masataka Yoshida to get the Red Sox the lead in the seventh inning. And Will Middlebrooks hit it right on the head. Also, great call from Will Fleming. But what Will Middlebrooks said, it was so true, because he rides Nick Sogard in the ninth spot, and he hits a big double in the seventh inning. And also, that was one of the big plays of the game, because he takes second base. We know Aaron Judge's arm right now is compromised. He threw that ball to second base at 73 miles an hour. So Sogard smartly went to second base on that one, got the extra base, Rafaela to third, and then Yoshida, who has been awesome over his last 13 games, coming through with the knock and having another memorable moment at Yankee Stadium. You felt good when he was the man that Alex Cora tapped to hit there for Rob Refsnyder with Luke Weaver on the mound. And this is why these lineups that come out, you have to take them with a grain of salt sometimes. Because, yeah, you might not see somebody like Willy Abreu in there or Yoshida, but they're going to get in there eventually. That's the whole point. And the Yankees, they only have one left-handed reliever in their bullpen in Tim Hill. And by the way, that's another thing about tonight, too. The Yankees used pretty much all their high-leverage guys tonight. So they've already gotten a turn in this series. That's something you should not forget, as it's related to how the rest of this could play out. So the Red Sox, they've already seen Weaver. They've already seen Fernando Cruz. They've already seen Devin Williams, and they've seen David Bednar. And for some reason, Boone used Bednar on Sunday against the Blue Jays, or not against the Blue Jays, against the Orioles, when the Blue Jays were up like 13-4, as if that game mattered at all anymore. And I think it was sort of questionable that he was brought in the ninth inning when they were down 2-1. And you just have to remember that when you get into postseason series. I know this is a shorter one, but that was, if you're going to criticize any Aaron Boone move, that, and then Jazz Chisholm for some reason coming in defensively for Ahmed Rosario, and knowing that Chapman's looming, again, you people that call and complain about Alex Cora, I don't understand you, especially when you watch these games and know that your arch rival has got this guy as his manager. All right, their manager. Anyway, let's bring the vibes back up. This is a memorable night, a fun night. Sox obviously a winner, 3-1 today against the Yankees. Game one of wild card series. Garrett Crochet was amazing. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Leon in Boston. He wants to talk about going straight to Chapman. What's going on, Leon? Thanks for joining us.
Hey, how's it going? It's Leo, actually. But
Leo.
Yeah, you're talking about Cora's decision making. How's it going? I haven't seen Chapman stretch from the eighth into the ninth that often this year. I thought it was kind of a gutsy move. I know they like to go to him against the lefties and save Whitlock for the righties in the ninth sometimes, if that's how the lineup shakes out. I really thought we were going to see Whitlock in the ninth. I thought it was a ballsy move. I obviously was on the edge of my seat like everyone, I'm sure, once the bases got loaded. I thought it was a terrible move at first, but, hey, it ended up turning out okay. Ballsy call from Cora. Awesome game. What a hit from Massa.
Hit it right on the head. Leo, thanks for the call. Yeah, it was ballsy, and I think this is what Cora does. I mean, and that's why I appreciate him so much as a manager, especially in the postseason, because he's got the feel for the players, and especially, like, you go back to 2018, he pushed all the right buttons on that run. And I feel like, and Zach, you can disagree with me if you want, or if you feel it in your heart that you disagree. I feel like that 21 team went as far as they were going to go, and I'll go to my grave thinking that they would have won that series against the Astros if Diaz, what's his
last
first?
Diaz
last Diaz last Diaz
called strike three on the backdoor breaking ball that Nathan Eovaldi threw to Jason Castro.
Yeah, I agree. I think they would. I think they would have won that series against the Astros and then ultimately fallen to the Braves in the World Series.
Yeah. Listen, it was a ballsy move. I totally agree. And yeah, it's one of these things, like, it's going to backfire if it doesn't work out. I mean, heck, you could say the same thing about Crochet pitching to Austin Wells, you know, like when he's already passed his career high in pitches. Like, that was ballsy too, but I give him the benefit of the doubt because I feel like he's got his finger on the pulse in a way that few guys do. That's why he gets paid the money he does as a manager. That's why he's up there in terms of highest paid managers in the sport. And now you save, at the very least, Whitlock for tomorrow. And he's still fresh. All these guys for the Sox are still fresh. I mean, this is the luxury of having somebody like Garrett Crochet on the mound, is that you can extend him, have him go deep into games, and then you can save some of those guys for maybe tomorrow's start. If Bayo gives you five innings, you know, five or six innings, and then if you need some, you know, and if this does get to game three, we know that they're going to need some help in the bullpen in that respect, because you could, I think from Connolly early, what you probably want five out of him. So,
yeah, like, if he gives you exactly what he gave you on Saturday, you take that and run, because he left you in a position to win the game.
Right. I totally agree. I want to just get to a text from my buddy, and then we're going to get some more texts as well. So, and if you want to chime in, 617-779-7937, the number to call in. We will also hear from Alex Bregman and Garrett Crochet coming up here in one moment. But my buddy David Kahn, longtime, lifelong Red Sox fan, his whole family is, he was texting in, and he was saying, I was nervous the entire game, but especially in the ninth inning after the three straight hits. And I posed this question, too, about what you think the outlook is of this team now that you've seen them play a playoff game, you've seen them win one here against the Yankees. And his answer here was max ALCS ceiling, but winning game one gives us such an upper hand in this series, so I feel a lot better than I did before the game. For the nervousness, I'm sure everybody was feeling that way. It's Red Sox Yankees. I mean, you're going to be on edge the entire time, and especially when the Yankees took the early lead with the Anthony Volpe home run. Somebody else texted, we lose in the ALCS. Our offense isn't good enough. I still, to both of you guys that have texted in, and I appreciate my buddy David tuning in, I still say this. What team in the American League is so good that you still feel concerned about them? Like, really genuinely, they strike fear in you. Concern.
Seattle.
Okay, so maybe Seattle, right? I actually, Zach, I'd agree with you. Maybe Seattle, another team out west that was so good for so many years, and Alex, like the Alex Bregman Astros that had kind of been there and done that for so long. They don't have the history of winning. So I agree with you, Zach. I think that they are probably the best team in the American League. But I still feel like they're beatable in a way that is different than other American leagues of the past, where you look at a team like those Astros teams that won all those years, or at least, and then, or if they didn't win it, they would make it to the World Series or the ALCS, just as a standard. There's no team like that in the American League. So I'm not even I pose that question because I'm not willing to cap this team's ceiling yet.
No, and I think if you advance, like if you get to that ALCS, then you're talking about the time frame where it might be Roman Anthony returns time, and I don't necessarily know that he's going to return from that injury and immediately be the Roman Anthony we saw before that, but just having his bat in the lineup, is the presence being there, is a threat. So like obviously the Mariners rotation, Gilbert, Wu, George Kirby, Luis Castillo, that scares you to death. But that lineup in Seattle, they go just as anemic as you do for periods of time. So, like, you just get hot at the right time and anything can happen.
And I think that's a great point. Obviously, they have Cal Raleigh. They added some bats. Josh Naylor's actually been pretty good for them since he came over in that trade with the Diamondbacks. I'm not willing to cap this team's ceiling. Now, if you talk about them being in the World Series and taking on whoever is the National League representation there. Okay, I would say that they're the underdog. But again, I felt like going into this series, not necessarily that they were the team that should be seen as the favorite, but I just thought they matched up well against the Yankees, and they showed why tonight. One more text, Zach, before we get to the there's one more text I want to get to before we get to the sound. Somebody chimed in, do you think that they sit Duran tomorrow against Rodon? He looked awful tonight. He didn't look good against Max Fried. I actually think that's a reasonable question.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been shocked if they didn't have him in the lineup tonight either.
And he's 2-for-16 lifetime against Rodon with just one double. I wonder if they do make a change in some way so that he's not in the starting lineup. That was maybe one Cora lineup decision that you could question, and I think fairly, although at the same time, Duran is such an important part of this team. We know that. And maybe on some level, Alex Cora is like, okay, you're one of our foundational pieces, even if he was on the trade block at one point. You know, he's the guy that he's pointed to so many times and said, okay, this is what you can be to the younger players if you work hard, all that stuff. But I think it's a very reasonable question, and I would actually strongly consider sitting him start the game. I know he hit the big home run against the Rays, against Garrett Clevenger, you know, last week. It was a huge moment, but I think that's a very fair question. Again, it's such a short series. You want to maximize every opportunity that you have. I think it's reasonable. I think it's definitely reasonable.
And with how aggressive Cora is in managing these playoff games, like, you know he's going to get into the game. Like, tonight we saw Nathaniel Lowe, we saw Massa, obviously. We saw him be aggressive with Chapman. Like, with the way that Cora manages the playoffs, he'll play tomorrow, even if he's not in the starting lineup.
Exactly, exactly. There's going to be a point that they're going to need him. Like, it's not going to be... Rodon's not giving you 9. Or he's not giving the Yankees 9. It just doesn't happen in baseball. Especially in the playoffs. And Rodon's such an interesting guy, too, because we've seen him pitch well against the Red Sox, but we've seen the Red Sox also take care of business against him. Whatever version's going to show up tomorrow, we'll obviously wait to see. But hopefully the Bayo that we know that pitches so well at Yankee Stadium, who's got a 1.44 ERA lifetime in 5 starts, that version shows up at Yankee Stadium. And he kind of rights the ship after a not-so-great end to his regular season. But again, the Red Sox, a 3-1 winner here against the Yankees in Game 1 of the Wild Card Series. We teased this, so let's get to it right now. Here is Alex Bregman and Garrett Crochet talking after the Sox 3-1 victory.
I know he's sitting right next to you, but if you speak to the performance that Garrett gave tonight, and Garrett, just speak to kind of that confidence that your manager showed leaving you out there for as long as he did tonight.
Well, every time he takes a mound, we feel like we have a really good chance to win. He competes his tail off. Thought that he was executing all of his pitches tonight to both sides of the plate. He was aggressive. You could see it in his eyes before the game that he wanted it bad. And every time he takes the mound, we love going out there and playing defense behind him. Just a performance that big-time pitchers make, and that's who he is, and I'm super proud of him.
Yeah, with him leaving me in there, though, I just wanted to really honor that decision. You know, I felt like he's put a lot of faith in me this year, and I haven't let him down yet. I was pretty damn sure this wasn't the first time.
Okay, you can stay in the middle of that, Sean.
Garrett, performance aside, how did this match up to your expectations in terms of the experience of pitching, starting a postseason game?
To be honest, I really wasn't sure what to expect, especially having not played a postseason game here. But it was an electric atmosphere all night long. You know, I feel like we rose to the occasion. And even in the ninth inning there, I felt like it was really never a doubt with Chapman on the mound.
Down here in the front row on the right, Steve.
Garrett, to your right. That moment with you and Lucas in the dugout wasn't just two guys commemorating a game. What was that all about? Obviously, you have a history going back to Chicago and all that, but can you speak to that a little bit, please?
Yeah. I felt like that he was just proud of me. You know, he's known me since I was a kid. And to be able to answer that challenge today and just go as deep in the ballgame as I could and just try my best to give us a chance to win, I felt like he was just proud of me.
Okay.
Ron, the first row here.
Alex was telling a story a few minutes ago about how yesterday in the dugout, he was calling staff in the bullpen, and you told him, you're only going to need the phone once tomorrow. What made you think of that?
Just being arrogant, to be honest. you know, I didn't actually expect that to be the case, but, you know, when he sent me back out there, I was determined to leave it that way.
Do you ever wish you were one of these old-time throwback pitchers in another era, and you could throw 130-pitch complete games every 5 days?
I don't know if it's sustainable with my velocity. I'm not sure how hard they were throwing back then, but I like to think that I'm prepared to do that even today's game.
Okay. Stay there on the right in the second row, Jen.
Alex, we've asked you so many times throughout the season about playing with this young group of guys, and obviously it was a big game for a lot of them. This is your 100th, I think, postseason game. How did you think the guys handled it and kind of rose to the occasion?
I thought it was great. I thought nobody tried to do too much. Everybody stayed within themselves, tried to just compete and be in the moment and play their game. And I think everyone trusted their own abilities, and that's what we talked about before the game, and I thought the guys did a good job of that.
Yeah, on the right, in the middle, Rob.
Alex, how did you feel today, and how much better did you feel than yesterday?
A lot better today than yesterday, for sure. I feel like every day has been better, so just trying to kick this virus and keep going.
Okay, on the left over here, Tim.
First for Garrett. They had a couple singles in the first inning, the Volpe home run in the second inning, and then you retired, I believe, 17 in a row. Did anything change there that allowed you to get into a groove?
Just determined to keep the game tie or keep the lead where it was at one. Just wanted to do everything I could to give my team a fighting chance to get back into it. Nothing really changed mindset wise. Maybe a little bit more aggressive in the zone, but I think that was just me finding my rhythm as the game went on.
And then for both of you guys, the winner of Game One in these wild card series have won every time, all 12 times across the past few years. Why do you think that is, and how do you like your chances the next 24 to 48 hours?
Well, I think it's next pitch mentality. I think you take it one game at a time, one pitch at a time, and when the clock strikes midnight, on to the next day and worry about the next pitch and continue to stay focused on execution.
In the back on the right, Duke.
Garrett, can you take us through the mindset that after you give up the home run, this place is going wild. It's a huge start for you. You're the ace. You seem to just get so much better. And then that last pitch, 100 miles per hour. I don't know if you looked back and saw it.
I did.
Can you take us through that? You did, yeah. What was the mindset, though, after the home run and this place was going wild?
Yeah. So what next pitch? The last thing that I want is, you know, the eight guys playing behind me to think that I'm going to give in to the moment. Like I said, it was just a lot of determination to keep the game where it was and let us have a chance to claw our way back into it.
Hey, over here on the left, Ian.
Gary, you said you felt good even with Chapman. Was that still the case with the bases loaded and nobody out there in the bottom of the ninth?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's the best reliever in the American League, and I don't think that it's too big of a leap to say something like that. You know, especially with a huge insurance run there in the ninth. We get a double play, and they score one, and then it's one out to go. I feel really good about that.
Okay, Rod, first row.
For Alex, you've been now with Garrett and before with Verlander, Cole. What does having a pitcher like that do to your mindset on the field?
Well, it's huge. They're very similar. Very confident, aggressive, prepared, focused, determined, like he said tonight. And it brings a confidence to your team that is so important, especially in postseason baseball. And I've played with some of the best pitchers ever to do it, and Garrett's right up there. So it's awesome to take the field with him, and I feel like, I don't know how old he is, 25?
26.
But he's 26, but he's super mature and super prepared and focused and has the same mentality that those guys have.
On the far right, Jorge.
Alex, you guys have been an aggressive base running team all season, but
with Aaron Judge in particular, knowing that he does have an injured arm. Are you guys, did you guys come into this series ready to challenge him whenever possible?
I feel like he's one of the best outfielders in all of baseball, obviously, offensively and defensively. So I feel like you kind of just got to play the game with feel for the situation, time in the game, outs, situation, when to be aggressive, when not to be aggressive, and kind of just, yeah, just trust your instincts.
And as a guy who's played 100 playoff games, how much does that one base, those kind of plays, how much of a difference can that make in October? Well, October at midnight, but October.
It can make a difference. One base here, one base there, and I thought the guys did a good job of being aggressive, and smart. Feel like you wanna be both.
Far right, Jake.
For Garrett, last year at the trade deadline, you know, there was a lot said about your desire to secure an extension if you were going to continue to pitch deep into the playoffs. And when that happened, there were some whispers around the game questioning you and that decision and maybe even your toughness. Was that something that you took to heart at the time? Something that you thought about, that you let motivate you, or did it not even, you know, you paid any mind?
I don't think that I would be where I am if I let outside noise affect my own drive and motivation. You know, for me, it was just a commitment to play for the team that, you know, I owed something to. And at the time, it was the White Sox, and now it's the Red Sox. And I'm going to do everything I can to give us a chance to win every time I grab the ball.
And then just in terms of pitching over 110 in a playoff game, did you feel different? Did you feel tired? Did you feel any kind of unique exhaustion with it being a playoff game? Did you have to pitch differently carrying that amount of load?
I feel like in this environment, it's really hard to feel any sort of fatigue beyond mental. And up until that point, I was still incredibly locked into the game, especially right after we took the lead. Just wanted to go out there and secure a shutdown inning. And there was a lot at stake, so it just kept me locked in and engaged the whole time.
We'll take two more. Here, Ian on the left.
Alex, just kind of playing as many playoff games as you have, how much does it sometimes come down to guys like Nick Sogard? And what kind of has impressed you about him as you've kind of watched him through the season?
No, he's been awesome. He does so many things really well on the baseball field, defensively, offensively, runs the bases, plays multiple positions, prepares his tail off, and it showed tonight. AC said at the beginning of spring training, he said it's going to take every single person in this room if we want to get to where we want to get to, and Sogie was so big tonight.
Okay, last one here on the left, Jerry in the back.
Alex, obviously you've played a ton of playoff games here in the past. Where did this one, you know, in terms of intensity and energy, does that compare to the ones you guys played with Houston, given the Boston, New York history?
For sure. Unbelievable playoff atmosphere from pitch one all the way through the end of the game. You got to love the game of baseball. This is what it's all about.
Indeed you do. Indeed you do. Especially after a win like tonight, with Garrett Crochet doing what he did. Great to hear his post-game comments. And I think we've learned so much about his makeup this season. This guy's built for the moment. He's built for this. And what I mean by this is being a star athlete in this market. Not everybody can do it. Not everybody can do it. But this guy so clearly can. And he rose to the occasion in a monumentous way tonight against the Yankees. 3-1 final, Red Sox winner in Game 1 of the Wild Card Series. When we come back, we'll preview Game 2. Brian Bello on the mound for the Red Sox, opposite of Carlos Rodon. If you want to get your calls in too, you can get them in at 617-779-7937. We'll also talk about lineup construction as well for this Game 2 matchup against the Yankees. Back right after this on WEEI.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Red Sox Review on WEEI.
All right, back here on Red Sox Review, Joe Weil with you, Zach Coe behind the glass. It would be even more fitting if they played the Liza Minnelli version of this song. Zach, I don't know if you knew that, knew the story about they used to play Liza Minnelli's version when they lost. And she got really upset about that, as you might expect. And so then they went to play New York, New York by Frank Sinatra for both. Of course, they've just changed that now for That's Life. I heard you guys play that for a rejoin for Christian Arcan. But we're wrapping things up here. We got a minute to go. The pitching matchup tomorrow, Carlos Rodon versus Brian Bello. Super interesting in so many different levels, especially from the Bello standpoint. A guy that's been so good against the Yankees in his career. But coming off a tough month of September where his cutter got hit a little bit more, it'll allow the Yankees to get their left-handed bats also into the lineup. They didn't use Ben Rice at all in this game, and they used Jazz Chisholm late. So we'll see how it all shakes out. But again, Yankees-Red Sox, this rivalry never gets old, and especially when Garrett Crochet pitches like the way he does, we get to celebrate a victory afterwards and talk about it, dissect it. So much fun. And again, so many heroes alongside Crochet tonight. Big thank you to Zach Coe. I'm Joe Weil giving you the final one final time. Red Sox 3, Yankees 1. We got the Mass Mutual pregame show starting tomorrow, a little past 5 with Christian Arcan. Thanks for joining us.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.